Brothers for this kind invitation. I mean, it's a real pleasure to be here and have the chance of telling you everything about the many talents of the crest detectors. So as this workshop is, I've been told that I should use the stick because it works better. As this workshop is new directions in dark matter and neutrino physics, you might wonder why crest detectors for dark matter and neutrino physics. I think this is, you get it right away. If you look at the recoil spectra expected on calcium tungsten for different processes, like in red you have the coherent neutrino nucleus scattering at 40 meters from a 4 gigawatt nuclear power plant. The dashed line is the expected spectra from 200 MeV dark matter particle with a cross-section of 1 picobar, and the solid black line is CNNS of solar neutrinos. So you see that for comparable cross-sections, the rates and the energy transfer are not very different. So a detector which could do dark matter, which has the requirements for this, is suitable both for dark matter and neutrino physics. And the requirements are essentially the same, so low threshold and very small background levels. This is what crest detectors can do. Here is an overview of crest detectors over time. We started from cube sapphire, went to cylindrical large calcium tungsten. We are going for something smaller at present. But what all these detectors have in common is that they are all, as the name of the experiment says, they are all cryogenic calorimeters, and they all use superconducting thermometers. So I think not many of the audience are very familiar with cryogenic detectors, so I will briefly go through them. What a cryogenic detector, what it is? It's nothing else than a calorimeter at low temperature. So a calorimeter is essentially an absorber, an appropriate temperature sensor, and a link to a heat bath. In a very simplified model, what happens as a consequence of an energy deposition is that the temperature of the sensor rises and then relaxes back to its equilibrium. And in first approximation, we always say that the temperature rise is proportional to the energy deposit and inversely proportional to the heat capacity. Here on purpose, I didn't think specifically which heat capacity, because in a normal calorimeter, you think of the heat capacity of the absorber. In reality, this is valid only for a system which is in thermal equilibrium, so when the thermometer measures the temperature of the absorber. In our case, in the case of crest detectors, this is not the case. So I go quickly through the signal formation to tell you how they work, really. In thermal equilibrium, the absorber is at the temperature of the bath. And in the absorber, the phonon population in the absorber has a spectrum which is typical of the temperature. When there is an energy deposition, this gives rise to a population of high-frequency acoustic phonons. I made it almost monochromatic. This is not always the case. The initial spectrum depends on the interaction, but let's say this is on timescales which are irrelevant. And this initial phonon population then starts to decay to a thermal distribution. So first there is a very, very fast decay, and then the frequency, the spectrum of frequency stays almost constant for times of the order of milliseconds, still out of equilibrium, and this phonons out of equilibrium spread ballistically over the absorber and fill it uniformly. And only then the population of phonons relaxes to an equilibrium distribution, and then this is an increase of the temperature of the absorber. Our detectors are sensitive to the non-equilibrium phonon population, so essentially they are sensitive to this population which fills ballistically the absorber. What happens in this case is that the signal, the amplitude of the signal is still proportional to the energy deposited, but inversely proportional in this case to the heat capacity of the sensor itself. The rise time of the signal is determined by the lifetime of the non-thermal phonon population and the decay by the link to the bath. So these are the basic constraints that you always have to keep in mind when you make the optimization of a detector, of a cryogenic detector. The sensor in our case is a transition edge sensor. This is a relatively simple object, so it's nothing else than the film of a superconductor which is operated into the normal to superconducting phase transition. And the reason for that is that in this region of the transition, the resistance is a very steep function of the temperature. So to give you a feeling for orders of magnitude, when we have an energy deposition of KV in the absorber, we see a temperature rise in the TS of microkelvin, which is then a resistance change of typically some milliohms. Crest detectors a bit more in the details. I don't start from the Crest 1 detectors because otherwise, I mean, we go to history and not to new directions. but the CREST2 detectors, you might know already, we use as absorbers scintillating crystals, so scintillating calcium tungstate crystals, operated as cryogenic calorimeters. And as they scintillate, we need a way to read out the scintillation light. And for that, we use a separate cryogenic calorimeter, a light detector, which is paired to each crystal. When there is an energy deposition in the absorber, in the scintillating absorber, this mainly produces a phonon signal, which is almost independent of the interacting particle, so gives a precise measurement of the deposited energy. And a small fraction of this energy goes into scintillation light. In this case, the amount of scintillation light is characteristic of the type of interaction, and this opens up the possibility for particle identification on an event-by-event basis. So an event in a CREST module is essentially two pulses from the two transition edge sensors of the two detectors, and this we normally represent in the light yield versus energy plane, where light yield is the ratio of light signal over phonon signal. As the light yield is characteristic of the event type, events of different origin show up in such a plane, in different regions of such a plane. So a signal, an expected signal, which is expected as nuclear recoils, would show up in this region here between red and green band, while the dominant background is expected as electron recoils, so would show up in the blue region up there. And this is what allows discrimination on an event-by-event basis. The latest result that we obtained with one of these detectors dates back almost 2 years now. Yes, it was Taub 2015, so we obtained it with a detector 300 grams calcium tungstate crystal, which had a threshold of 300 EV. And this result, here is the limit plot from the original publication, was world-leading below 1.7 GV till last Sunday, when a new result from NewsG appeared on the archive. But what is very important is that due to the low threshold of this detector, this allowed for the first time a direct dark matter search to explore a parameter space in the sub-GV range. And this is clear in a way, if you want to look for very light dark matter, you need detectors which have a low threshold. This is what guided the design for the new CREST detectors. So we optimized the layout for low mass dark matter, and essentially what we did was a radical reduction of the absorber size, absorber dimension. We reduced the volume by almost a factor of 10, and as I tried to tell you before, this required a fine-tuned optimization of the sensors as well. And our threshold goal at the design time was a threshold of 100 eV. The details of the other details of the layout I skipped. Maybe if you want to know other details of how the detector looks like, we can discuss it later. Here you see some pictures during the assembling of some of the detector modules. We produced 10 of them. This picture I always have to show because I find it so nice. This is a mounting kit, essentially, for one of these modules. This gives you an idea of, though it's a very small object, how many details one has to pay attention to. Here is a module almost assembled, and here the first four already built in the Gran Sasso cryostat. The data taking with the module started July last year. In the meanwhile, we had a high statistics gamma calibration, a high statistics neutral calibration, and we always use 20% of the data for a training set, so 20% of the data doesn't sum up to the final exposure. Of course, besides the optimization of the detector layout, we had to improve some other aspects from the data in the data analysis and the data acquisition to fully exploit the potentials of these detectors. From the data analysis point of view, we introduced a pulse height evaluation based on an optimum filter. This is nothing fundamentally new, but has quite an impact. So we used the Gatti-Manfredi filter, which maximizes the ratio between the amplitude of the treated pulses and the noise RMS. Here you see in the plot the noise spectrum taken from empty baselines, the noise spectrum of a pulse taken from a template, and the transfer function of the filter. And here you see the effect. So this is a pulse as is, and this is after being filtered. Though this is a minor change in the analysis, so normally we get an improvement in resolution by a factor of 2 to 3. More important, in a way, is the use of the optimum trigger for the threshold determination of the detectors. This, of course, cannot be done on hardware trigger data. So in order to use this, we had to implement a new data acquisition for Crest 3, which essentially continuous samples the raw data from the experiment. And what we call the optimum filter is based on the study of the noise distribution after the filter in order to set the threshold. So studying this noise distribution after the filter, we could get to an analytical description of the amplitude distribution in empty baselines. This means that we can, with this method, having an analytical description at hand, we can define the threshold of the detectors according to the noise triggers that we are ready to accept above threshold. So in this case, this is the case of detector A. Here you see the rate of noise triggers above threshold as a function of energy. So for this detector, if we accept one count per kilogram day above threshold, one noise trigger per kilogram day above threshold, then the detector has a threshold of 26 eV. If we are ready to accept 100 noise triggers above thresholds, or then always per kilogram day, then this detector has a threshold of 22.6 eV. These results were presented at LTD last week, and here is an overview of the optimum thresholds which we determined for the detectors. The spread is always this 1,000 counts per kilogram day above threshold. You see that five detectors reached or exceeded some by far the design goal of CREST. So it's clear that with these detectors we are opening new frontiers in the direct dark matter detection. The data, we made a dark matter data analysis for one of the detectors for this data taking period from October 2016 till beginning of this month. And the preliminary results of this dark matter analysis will be presented at TAUP, though I have to point out that we present results only for a high threshold analysis. So we set an analysis threshold of 100 dB. We did not analyze, we did not even unblind the data below 100 dB. Yes? At 100 dB, I cannot tell you how the spectrum looks like.
Based on the expectations from what you're trying to see for, it looked like.
Noise triggers, of course, we don't expect noise triggers in sense of triggering of a baseline when there is no pulse, but
okay.
There might be other backgrounds, not only noise. Still, I mean, these detectors are done for dark matter, but once you have such ozone detectors, you can think of doing something else with them. Here you might see, I mean, these are the projections that we made some time ago for CREST 3 detectors. And you see that with a ton day exposure, we would start to reach the neutrino floor, given that the background conditions stay under control as it was assumed for the projections. Still, approaching the neutrino floor doesn't mean detecting anything. If we want to have some detection potential, we would need exposures of order 50 kilogram years. And this means essentially 2 years of running with something like 1,000 of these modules. This is obviously an enormous technological challenge, but I just want to point out that the detectors, which have these low thresholds, have the potential for that. And it's a technological challenge to build up such a gigantic experiment. In this line of development, we went even further. We started prototyping some extremely small objects in the gram scale. Here is the picture of a first one. This is a sapphire crystal of half a gram mass with its optimized thermometer. This object we could operate above ground in a totally unshielded setup. And even in these extreme conditions, it reached a threshold around 20 eV. You can ask yourself, what do you do then with a detector which has such a low threshold and can be operated above ground? So if we go back to the first plot I've shown you, and here I highlight the background levels of shallow experimental site or well-shielded ground level sites. You see that when you have 20 eV threshold and you have such a site, you could really detect CNNS from a nuclear power plant. So, and from this comes the idea of this nucleus experiment. This was published on the archive some weeks ago. It's only at a very early R&D phase in a way, but the idea is to use two arrays of calcium tungstate and sapphire crystals for a total mass of about 10 grams and exploit the strong material dependence of CNNS to discriminate signal from background. Here you see that these are the count rates on calcium tungstate and sapphire at different distances from 4 gigawatt nuclear power plant. And you see that with 10, 20 eV, you have you might have quite a significant signal. In addition, well, this is an R&D still, but we have this prototype which has 0.5 gram, and we thought what one could learn from such an object. This is something which is not yet published, but should appear on the archive today or tomorrow. So what you see here is the spectrum which we obtained from this calibration measurement from this prototype. It's a very short exposure, and this is an iron source. And we were wondering which kind of dark matter limits you can get with such a detector. So we did, at the beginning, we did it almost for fun. We applied no data quality cut whatsoever because this was just a prototype in extreme conditions, and used a very conservative optimum interval method to get out a limit out of it. And this is what comes out. So, of course, the sensitivity is limited by the extreme background conditions. But this shows you that whenever you have a detector which has such a low threshold, you can explore really new parameter space of low mass dark matter. And this, I thought, it's the best way to really tell you that whenever a detector reaches new frontiers, it opens up to new potentials. And of course, from the experimentalist point of view, it faces us with new challenges which we have to solve every day. So thank you very much.